It's great to see so many of you here on this cold day. So many of my colleagues in the back east and in the middle Atlantic had to cancel church this morning, so some of them might be watching. But you all wanted to get out of the house this morning, didn't you? That's right, so here you are. I did get out of the house yesterday. I went to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther, actually this was Friday, I'm sorry, let me start over. I went to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Cell clergy lunch on Friday. I've attended the luncheon a few times over the years, and I was free Friday, and so I went. I mean, I was looking for inspiration / procrastinating writing the sermon, so I went to the luncheon on Friday. One of the speakers, and there were many speakers, began with the phrase, "We all remember 1968. It's a very impassioned older white man who I like personally, but we all remember 1968. It was -9 in 1968. Living in the past. Instructions went out last week. Instructions, advice from one of my colleagues, a reminder really, said do not preach about Dr. King. Don't do it. If you'll praise the man but forget about the radical critique of the social order, then don't. If you'll talk about love but not about truth, then don't. If you only talk about racial justice one Sunday a year, then just don't. Instead of preaching about Dr. King, she wrote, preach what he would preach in this moment. Call us to justice, call us to healing, call us to righteousness like a mighty stream. I was thinking about it, about that at the luncheon. Thankfully, at the luncheon, another speaker, one who I know well and knew was also not yet alive in 1968, he did that, thankfully. He called us to be faithful leaders for the work of now, in this time and in this place. How do we, clergy, how do all people, he asked, be leaders that call people to truth and caring of one another? He mentioned Dr. King's spiritual ancestors, those who preached justice before him, including, he went all the way back to the Samaritan, the unnamed Samaritan, the man who stopped by the side of the road and served his neighbor, loved him back to health. The implication was, of course, that just as people had preached love and justice before Dr. King, it is now our job to preach love and justice in our time. Honoring Dr. King is about the now, not about the past. As Iwoja Alu, who's writing about race I love so much, said in her address, this is not about a celebration, this is about honoring his practice. Honor it by speaking truth in love, with truth unafraid and unarmed, confronting injustice. As James Baldwin wrote, not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faced. We must face truth and name it so we can change it. Not living in the past, but in the now. So let's talk about truth. Let's talk about what's the reality here locally, right here in this place. Well, formal segregation is over, but informal remains, and it's always been informal that dominated in the North. We're too often separated, not just by the river or a line through town, but by a chasm of ignorance, not knowing, not being connected. Redlining is unofficial, but still very real. I gotta tell you that I got a bone to pick with the realtors and the apartment association. For too long, these folks have profited from poverty and from discrimination, and efforts currently, like this week currently, to oppose changes that lift up communities that have been neglected do not strike me as wise or appropriate. You can tell I said so. I've also been thinking about Carrie Blake. You know this name? Some of you do. Carrie Blake, a black man with schizophrenia, was killed by the Rockford Police Department on December 30th. His family begged the police to be allowed to talk to him, to talk him down from the standoff that they were in. He was barricaded in his home, didn't have any guns, just a pipe. They had talked him down before, but apparently this time the police refused. And I, for one, have some hard questions for the chief about why. He might not answer those questions until the report comes out, but I'd like to ask them anyway. And I also have some questions for us, for this wider community, about why people of color and poor folks with mental illness get so little help. And if we think it's okay that the jail is the primary provider of mental health care in our community, do we think that's okay? I don't. I could go on. We're not where we want to be, and closing the achievement gap in our schools, not even close. And I don't think standardized tests are a great way to measure success, but the scores of too many of our children of color are not acceptable. And resistance to accountability from the leaders in the system and from folks on the ground does not help us solve the problem. You must face it to change it. They opened Javon Bay Hospital a few weeks ago, big celebration. Tomorrow, they'll finally start finishing to tear down the Essex factory on North Main. Finally got the money out of the guy to tear it down. And I was at a thing on Thursday. Some of you were there, and it was announced. The mayor said, we're going to tear it down. People clapped. I clapped, too. I'm glad it's going to get cleaned up. It's hazardous, and it's an eyesore. But I note this fact. We celebrate building on the east and tearing down on the west. Those are just some of the things that are happening locally. If you thought my Dr. King sermon would be a feel-good sermon about unity, well, none of you who come here often thought that was going to happen. That. We honor Dr. King when we speak the truth. Right? We must face the facts and name them if we want to change them. That's just locally. What about nationally? Well, an unrepentant racist occupies the White House, and racism still holds sway through too many of the centers of power in our country. The government workers who approved new electronic gadgets for the market went back to work on Friday. They determined that they were essential, but the ones who process food stamps or housing subsidies, no, they're still furloughed. The workers not being paid are hostages for a racist vision of a wall. Dr. King would rail, you know he would. He would rail, and actually we don't have to guess about this. When he preached in East Berlin in 1964, he said this. Here on either side of the wall are God's children, and no man-made barrier can obliterate that fact. Whether it be east or west, people search for meaning, hope for fulfillment, yearn for faith in something beyond themselves, and cry desperately for love and community to support them in this pilgrim journey. Regardless of the barriers of race, creed, ideology, or nationality, there is an inescapable destiny which binds us together. There is a common humanity which makes us sensitive to the sufferings of one another. And I would add, at least it should. At least it should. We honor his legacy when we speak the truth. And though he confronted evil in the face and knew what it was, he was not without hope. Even though he correctly anticipated his own martyrdom, he had hope. Even though he saw the toxic mix of war and greed and hate, he had hope that someday we would hear the bells of freedom and justice would roll down like a mighty stream. That we would be led home. Led home. What is home? Grace leads me home. What is home? It's not backwards, it's forwards. It's not again, it's yet. It's not the past, it's the future. Our true home, the land for which we are bound, yonder come day. Lead me home to the kingdom of God, or to what King often called the beloved community. That our true home is in the beloved community, the place of justice and peace and love between all people, heaven on earth. This beloved community is what we are building slowly with struggle, steps forward and steps backwards, steady movement and rocky movement. Our true home, where grace would lead us, where we journey to, was the place where all were free to dance and be amazing. The home is in the future, not the past. Yonder come day. Yonder come day. Day is breaking in my soul, and the vision of a better world pulls us forward. We believe that a change is going to come and that the world we seek is possible. What is that world we seek? Hold the vision clearly in your mind of what that world looks like so you know where you're going. It's where everyone is treated with dignity all the time, where our cultures, our lives, our uniqueness, and our commonality are all loved. And we don't have to choose between parts of ourselves to be fully ourselves. It's where everyone has enough income to live with basic security and housing and food and decency, where your zip code doesn't limit your chances or your exposure to America's diversity, where people of all genders can be safely and fully present in the world, where immigrants are treated with love, not as tools for corporations or demons for the right or pawns for some on the left, where we care about our children and their lives and the planet that we share together. That's the vision, justice and freedom that's worthy of our work. It's the home we seek. But how do we know this vision is even possible? Is it a fantasy? And how do we get there? Well, Dr. King wasn't just a dreamer. He was also an organizer, a union organizer, a church organizer, and a political theorist. And he had a theory of change, a model of how we get there. He described exactly how you do it. And it begins, as it should in his case, with a theological claim that the kingdom of God isn't some far-off place. It is, as Jesus said, right here and now. It's in you. It is in you and in us. King argued likewise that the beloved community wasn't just the destination, it was the way, that it was in us. This is the central claim of active nonviolence, his method, that the only way to peace was peace. The only way to love is love, and the only way to justice is justice. And when we taste those moments, when we experience that beloved community in little moments of peace and love and justice, we are renewed for our journey home. When we dance, when we experience solidarity, when even if just for an hour we feel in our bones the world that we seek, these are moments of grace. And those moments of grace sustain us. They point the way. And the gap between these moments and the world as it is tell us what work we are called to do. This is how we make sure our journey home is for something and not just against something, that we are active and not just reactive. I don't want to know what you're fighting against. I want to know what you're fighting for. Have you had these moments of the grace of justice and love when someone loved you until you could love yourself? Moments when you felt that the world that is yet to be but worth fighting for, you felt it right alongside the world as it is. When it pops up, you think, that's what we want. Have you had those moments? I have. I felt one yesterday. In -9 with the wind chill, marching with 300 people of all genders in the local women's march. I saw a lot of you there. We're bundled up in our coats and mittens. Some of you gave me a hard time about not having a hat. I saw a politically moderate Republican woman welcome to the microphone a transgender radical of color to speak. I saw a mayor and a congresswoman chat with folks from all walks of life, and I saw children of every race in their coats and their mittens, and I saw Muslims and Jews march together and love each other, and I saw advocates for immigration justice hand out warm tamales. It was great. It's cold, but it was great. I can name thousands of moments of beloved community over the years like that. Moments when you experience the world that we seek, some of them right here in this room. When people see each other as fully human, when people are free to dream and become, when barriers of oppression slip for a moment and the new is visible, these moments of incarnation are grace. They are signposts on the journey home. They tell us the way, and the way is love. They tell us the way, and the way is love. How do we know that justice will roll down like waters? Because we've known rivers. Because we've bathed in the rivers of grace. We know that justice is possible because we've had moments when it was real. We know that freedom is possible because we've felt it. We know that peace is possible because every once in a while, the river flows and peace is real. Not all the time, but every once in a while. We've known rivers. You have known them. You've seen it and you've felt it. And so we cannot give up and cannot give in and cannot stop working for the world where those moments are more and more often. The struggle is hard and the journey is long, but we know in our bones that it is worth it and that it is possible. The kingdom is in you already. Justice is in you, in us. We build it by practicing it. There's no other way to do it. We do it in how we are together. When the river flows through our souls and our hearts and our minds and we feel amazing, and when love prevails on earth, we know this is home. This is home. And grace, these moments and these people of love and kindness who embody that grace, this grace will keep leading us, guided by love. Guided by love will lead us home. I invite you to rise in body or spirit. We'll sing together. Love will guide us. Now, I know some of you are getting over cold, so if you'd rather not be touched, you hold your hands together, or I invite you to join hands with one another for our benediction and our blessing. I'll extinguish first the chalice, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These things we carry with us until we are together again. The words of our benediction are from the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, his acceptance of the Nobel Peace Prize. I refuse to accept despair as the final response to the ambiguities of history. I refuse to accept the idea that the isness of humanity's present nature makes us morally incapable of reaching up for the eternal oughtness that forever confronts us. I refuse to accept the idea that we are a mere flotsam and jetsam in the river of life, unable to influence the unfolding events which surround us. I refuse to accept the view that humankind is so tragically bound to the starless midnight of racism and war that the bright daybreak of peace and siblinghood can never become a reality. I refuse to accept the cynical notion that nation after nation must spiral down a militaristic stairway into the hell of thermonuclear destruction. I believe that unarmed truth and unconditional love will have the final word in reality. This is why right temporarily defeated is stronger than evil triumphant. I believe that wounded justice, lying prostrate on the blood-flowing streets of our nations, can be lifted from this dust of shame to reign supreme among the children of humanity. I have the audacity to believe that peoples everywhere can have three meals a day for their bodies, education and culture for their minds, and dignity, equality, and freedom for their spirits. I believe that what self-centered people have torn down, other-centered people can build up. I still believe that one day nonviolent, redemptive good will proclaim the rule of the land, and the lion and the lamb shall lie down together, and everyone shall sit under their own vine and fig tree, and none shall be afraid. I still believe that we shall overcome.